Hi everybody, it's Tom from Cricket Coach 365 and welcome to our latest podcast. Today we are delighted to be joined by Chris Pickett, all the way over in Hong Kong. And Chris's role over there is head of women's cricket and also team analyst for the men and women's game in Hong Kong. So welcome, Chris, and thank you very much for joining us.
No, thank you. Thank you for having me on, and good to chat.
Well, we're just offline. We were talking about the extreme weather conditions that you can experience down in Hong Kong, and maybe that will come up in our conversation as we go through. But the first question I'm going to ask you, which is the same we ask for all of our guests, is if you can describe, explain, or tell for the benefit of the listeners that first moment that you recollect or remember being involved or connected to the game of cricket.
I think probably it would have been spectator watching and that. I can't, my memory's usually pretty good, but I can't kind of align it to when I play. I always used to play like just outside in the garden or outside on in the street and that when I was young. But I distinctly remember kind of the first time my mum and dad took me to the county ground Hove. And that year, I know that kind of spell sparked a kind of we went a few times, me and my dad. He took some days off work during the week to go and that. I think it was it would have been then John Player League, the old John Player 40 over league and everything like that. And we went to a Sunday game. I remember kind of like throughout the week, my mum had kind of done the end of weekend shop, and there was these few bottles of like Coke in the fridge, which was a bit unusual for my mum and everything like this. And I'd kind of, as you do as a young lad, go, oh, yeah. Chance, and I know that we're done, and it's kind of that covert excuse as to why I couldn't touch it and everything like that. And then we went out on the Sunday. I didn't really know where we were going, and they took me to Hove, and kind of at that stage I already had a knowledge of cricket, and I like cricket and everything like that. I'd watch it on the TV and that, and I can remember distinctly lots of the previous kind of Gillette Cup finals. I remember a Gillette Cup final of Sussex against, I believe, it would have been Lancashire or something like that, early days and everything like that. And that, so it would have been probably late 70s or early 80s and that. And we went to a Sunday league game, and it was kind of old school cricket, you know, where there's not big stands or anything like that. You sat down in the deck chairs as Hove was quite traditional for and that. And I watched it, and it was kind of like, it was a done deal for very quickly and everything like that. So that same season, my dad and I went to what Sussex progressed quite well in the Gillette Cup, and I think I remember watching, and I get the order. I think we played Notts in the quarter final, and that would have had like George Sharp. I think George Sharp would have played for Nottingham then, if I remember right, who later went on to be an umpire and I later come across as, when I was working for Sussex, he was an umpire that used to do our games and like that, first class. And I believe we may have played Northampton in the semi-final and that. So I don't think, if I remember right, I think we got beat in the semi-final that year. We didn't get to the final. I'm not sure for certain, but it just captured there. And from then on, I was regular out of the county ground, whether it was me on my own, my mum, my mates and my mum or whatever. I was hooked. And I probably got into playing when I was about 7 or 8, actually, club cricket and that. I played a bit at school and then got into playing club cricket and that. So, yeah.
And so it was family, mum and dad taking you to the Hove that first time, and then getting into the Gillette Cup. Were there any particular players that you kind of remember enjoying watching when you went to follow Sussex?
Well, yeah, I mean, at that stage we would have had, when in my early days, we had a fairly impressive overseas lineup of Imran Khan and Javed Miandad. Kepler Vessels was there, also Gia Mendes, the Sri Lankan, and that. So we were always blessed with great overseas players. Garth LaRue would have been obviously another one of my, but yeah, and then you had your Sussex players, obviously Paul Parker, and that, and some great sort of stalwarts who probably never really got the kind of accolades they should have done, like Paul Phillipson and people like that. And prior to them, it would have been the first skipper I would have seen them play under would have been Arnold Long, and that. So yeah, so it went back. It was lots of players there, and like in slightly when I was a bit older, obviously players like Chris Waller, who I eventually went on to work with at Sussex when I first went there, and that. So kind of like it was kind of like a circular thing. The Welch brothers, first Colin would have been there, and then Alan, who again connections with once I started work for Sussex, and obviously Sussex, his son Luke Wells played at Sussex as well. So it's kind of like a lot of people that, you know, connections and that. So yeah, so it was, I think Sussex were in those days was sport for players, you know, John Barclay as well, and that. So yeah, and all people that I kind of ended up circulating around to and coming back to when I ended up working for Sussex later on.
Amazing. And I think I saw a post online from a friend of mine who knows Javed Miandad personally, and it reminded me that I think Javed is one of only four non-English cricketers to have scored over 100 first-class centuries. And he would have obviously contributed to that total when he was playing for Sussex.
Incredible player.
Like a run machine, absolute run machine.
And just skill level as well. His ability to manipulate any ball, wherever you put it, into any area he particularly wanted was, I think, a skill of his. And I know, knowing some of the guys who played with him that I later worked with, they said he used to do like a drill in the nets where he would literally get them to feed or early versions of a bowling machine to him, and he would just go around the clock and put a ball off the same spot in every area of that, and he's just great, you know, technique and that.
Amazing.
But yeah, but there's also other players like from other counties as well. You remember, like I remember Sussex at times being terrorised by Wayne Daniel running down the hill at home for Middlesex, and he was just frightening. He was frightening, and that you're just like, wow. And there's some great players, and obviously you'd have had Bob Willis as a young player then and stuff like that. So lots of great memories of great players, both of them. And obviously for me, the absolute man who was born probably 25 years too early for 2020 cricket, Viv Richards. I mean, there was one of the most unbelievable cricketers I've ever seen, and a truly decent person as well. And that,
very well said. So some fantastic experiences, and as you described it, you know, you got hooked almost straight away. I love the picture of the deck chairs that you painted there so eloquently for us all to sort of almost be there with you at the Hove at the time. But you also referenced the fact that you played junior cricket as a 7 or 8 year old. So tell us how that kind of went and how you moved on from junior cricket into adults.
We actually sort of a few of my friends and I were all at what was classed in those days at middle school, so up to the age of 12 before you move on to secondary, and we played a little bit of cricket and everything like that and stuff, and then we got in a 2 year period we got into like a school team. We decided to kind of put a school team together because there's a big band of us who are really keen on cricket. And we cut our own wicket in the on the school big outfield. We were lucky to have a decent outfield at the school I went to, and we had this really inspiring teacher called John Stone, who's kind of, I know me and all the guys who play still look back and that, and believe that that's one of those moments where you look back and somebody who properly influenced a great part of your life and everything like that, by getting you infused by not only cricket but football as well. And a tremendous teacher and everything like that, who just unbelievable enthusiasm to help you, you know, gain what you wanted to try and achieve and that. So I remember borrowing, the group of us going around to my granddad's house, who didn't live far from the school, and borrowing his roller and rolling the pitch. And we just got into it. That year we got into the school's final. We didn't win, we lost, but the guys umpiring it were from a club called St. Peter's, and they came on and they kind of invited us along to some nets anything like that. And at the same time, I was in the Scouts at the time, although once cricket started, Scouts had to take away because it clashed with my cricket and everything like that. And I went to an activity weekend at another local club, and that was actually being run by the same club, St. Peter's. And the guy there said to me, "Oh, come along." I said, "Well, I'd got an invite and everything like that, but I hadn't actually taken it up yet." So I went along with my friends, met a guy called Graham Evans, who was affectionately called Taff. He was one of the most legendary people I've ever met in my life. He could do, wasn't anything he couldn't do for you or anything like that. He was hugely helpful, funny, eccentric, but again, made my period between probably being 10 to 12 and up to 19, 20 to be fantastic, because he just helped run our club, and he was a proper proper volunteer, anything like that. So he was a tremendous influence on myself and the guys who all play cricket in that team. So yeah, so I played a huge amount of pretty much all my club life with that side, St. Peter's, up till 2005, where I couldn't do no more. I was kind of heavily involved at Sussex as analyst and everything like that. I was watching probably a quarter of a million balls a season and that, and kind of in the one or two days I got off, watching a Red Bull race around an outfield probably was too much for me. So I kind of packed it in then, and apart from dabbling in one or two games, I've never played since, and that I focused on my coaching and that. But it was a great time. It was a fantastic club to play for. They were brilliant and that, right through from junior right up to when I played senior and everything like that. So I really enjoyed my time there, and some great characters and lots of those people are still my friends now and that, of varying ages and that. So yeah.
And just tell us then how you transitioned, or how you found an interest in becoming a cricket analyst.
Quite accidental. I mean, I studied to be an engineer, and I graduated in 1992. There was a little bit of a lull in engineering at that stage. So my one of my friends who played cricket with me, a guy called Keith Greenfield, who's now the director of cricket at Sussex, he started playing first class cricket for Sussex in around 1984. He got like a bursary, like a kind of scholarship type thing to go to be in the Sussex Academy. And he'd gone through his coaching stuff. He was at level three. And he said to me, look, he said, I was at the same time helping to run my junior club, once I'd moved into the seniors, I helped the junior club. And he said, look, you're analytical because of your engineering background. You're kind of like, you've got a good coaching. I go, why don't you take coaching certificates? It's a way of earning some cash through doing schools coaching and that, while you're in that in between. So I did that and got myself on the road, qualified. I think I qualified for level three around mid-90s or something like that. But during that time, I was doing school stuff. And then in the late 90s, Pete Moores became the coach at Sussex. And I knew Pete from when my Keith was playing for Sussex and playing twos cricket and building himself up and that. So I knew Pete quite well, as pretty much as a friend, because he was close to Keith and that. And he approached me and said, like, I've been on an England A tour and everything like this, and I've seen this new thing called like an analyst computer by a company called Sports Code, I think it was an Australian company. And I've got this idea of, I've been talking to Bob Warmer, and he's talking to me about this product that's going to be coming out from a company called Cricstat. It's been designed for South Africa around their entry into the Kuala Lumpur Commonwealth Games. The cricket was there. I'm looking for somebody who's got a coaching background, but also has kind of got no fear of computers and is kind of got some analytical. Now, Keith, or Grubby, as everybody calls him, has kind of put your name forward, and obviously he knew me. So he got me to do a few projects to start with, where he had loads and loads of videotapes, and he knew I was quite gadgety and knew how to interconnect video recorders to try to cross record. So he got me with loads of game tapes and said, can you make me profile player tapes? So I started putting them together. And then they got the system. They got a system loaned to them by the ECB, which was tape-based and analytical. So kind of did that a little bit, but it was quite archaic. It was very big. It was like a trolley almost and that. But we started dabbling with that and doing stuff. But then he came to me and said, look, I've actually got a role. I'm going to need to combine it with a admin type job, because I just can't justify the finances at this moment for a, what we might call an analyst, he said, because it doesn't exist. So I've kind of got a few doors to open and everything like that. But if I can get you in and we can do it, fine. So he came in and I started working on it. And we just built it from there, really. I had no analyst background. I mean, a lot of the guys doing it now come out of degrees. And there wasn't a degree when I did it. So I kind of cut my own cloth of my own role and everything like that, and defined my own role. And it just built as we went along. You know, basically at the start, we were just really recording games and entering data. And the systems were quite restrictive. But then they started to develop and that. And then by 2005, I'd started working at Sussex in 99, December 99. And by about 2004-5, my influence and my impact was becoming more and more. And also in 2003, because there was a bit of pressure from the part of Sussex to actually not keep disappearing and actually fulfil some of my admin role, I couldn't go on all the away trips. So I contacted a lad called Barney Douglas, who has played club cricket with me and was one of the colts that I looked after when he grew up, and that he was at university doing a media course and journalism and that, and said, what are you doing during your summer off? And he said, not much. I said, well, how do you fancy following Sussex around on a few of their away games and that, and being, you know, doing some coding, some analyst work. So we kind of worked hand in hand. And then 2003, we were in a pub in Brighton, and we were going over, at that stage, obviously Sussex were building towards challenging for the county championship. And we said, God, if only we'd known, because of his journalism background and his filmmaking, if only we known this was going to happen, we could have filmed like a documentary in the dressing room. And then we said, like, well, hang on, would the whole season have been that interesting? Would it have been quite tedious? Maybe we just do that climactic running. So we took the idea to Pete Moores. Pete Moores loved it. He said, I just got to check with the players that they love it. And they loved it. And we did a like a flop. As well as my analyst role, Barney did the kind of a lot of the filming, but I also helped him because I was on the road as well. And we put together what was then a video called This Is History, which kind of documented. And we did it in a, it was done in a, he never liked me to use this term, Barney, but it was kind of like the Blair, it was like a Blair Witch thing where we didn't proper light it, we didn't do anything. It was really as we saw it, yeah, and like that. And it's still out there. You can think you can still buy it and everything like that and stuff. And that became quite popular. Started off as an internal dressing room project. And then our marketing department started getting inquiries. They'd heard this in the filming, had heard about it. Where could they buy it? And then it turned into something that we actually produced as a product for Sussex, and they sold. And I believe there were copies sold to places, you know, Colombia and people, like expats out in South America and everything like that, who Sussex fans. So it sold all over the world. I don't know the exact number of copies, but it went quite well. And from then on, Barney basically came on board more as a new media. I was the analyst, and we worked as like a two-man team where he was working in what was then new media. So the early days of Facebook barely existed then and stuff like that. And he put together and masterminded a thing called Sussex TV, which has ended up actually being the predecessor to what the ECB then, Barney then later on went to work for the ECB and created what was then ECB TV, and was kind of behind all the Swanee Diaries of that 2011 Ashes series. And
wow.
But yeah, so we worked hand in hand and stuff like that and that. And that's how it came about, really. I was probably in the right place at the right time. I gave up my engineering job overnight and pretty much said, right, I'm going to have a crack at you and everything like that. And so 13, 14 years later, I was still there at Sussex doing the analytical work, but we developed the role to being quite intrinsic within the fabric of the team and everything like that. So, yeah.
Well, that in itself is an amazing story, Chris. And I think, you know, now anybody who follows cricket understands the analyst plays a pretty significant role. And, you wouldn't necessarily say now exclusively in the white ball game, but certainly that's where a lot of those analysts seem to kind of earn their crust. But it sounds to me as though you were very much, you and Peter Moores, along with Barney and Grubby, as you call him, were almost pioneers in getting that that kind of profession off the ground at Sussex at the time. Peter was a guest on the podcast months ago, and we didn't get the opportunity to talk about everything, but that's a great anecdote, and I'll mention it to him when I speak to him again. But so yeah, right place, right time, but also right skills and right interests, I would say.
I think it was. I think obviously Pete is. I mean, in some ways, he's all. In the England thing, he got used against him a bit negatively and everything like that. But he was really, really pioneering and driving in that field. And then obviously in 2005 when he left, 2004-2005 when he left to go and work for the academy, Robbo took over. And to be fair to Robbo, he took it on with me even further. Some extent, he kind of at that stage, it was through him that I pretty much become solely the analyst. It became my one role and everything like that, and then it just flourished. He gave me masses of responsibility. He gave me a voice, and Peter gave me a voice, no, without a doubt. But I think it kind of like
it grew.
it grew massively in that. And that's artists. And when you go in and you're sitting in the dressing room with the likes of, at that stage, a young Matty Pryor, but you've got Murray Goodwin, you've got Chris Adams, you've got Mushtaq Ahmed and some world-class players you're coming across and the overseas players. To actually be able to kind of give some advice to these guys, this can be quite early, quite daunting, but in credit to the players, they bought into it so well that that job wasn't really... I never found that job really difficult. I always felt, even the guys that said to me, honestly, I don't know what you're talking about. That's not how I play. I'm instinctive and I play like that and everything like that. But they respected what I did and said, that's fine. I've got no bug against it. I can't kind of get it. I just go out there and hit it. But they were always absolutely with it and everything like that. And I think what Robbo did as well was... He also took my role to a point of being like trouble solving. So I wasn't also an analyst, possibly like some of the guys you see on Twitter and everything like that, really banging on about stats. Somebody called me a statistician once, and I kind of said politely, "Don't call me a statistician; you're likely to get punched," and everything like that. And I said, "That's a joke," but I'm an analyst. I said my job is I'm not really buried in the numbers and everything like that. Robbo wasn't a numbers person, and he wanted. He's always said to me, "Wilf, if you hand me something, and it's not going to win a game, I don't want to know." And I knew that. I always knew that anyway. So I never handed him something that I didn't think would win us a game, get us points or whatever. It had to have a purpose, and it had to have deep and that. So I was never really. I had a good counterpart with me. Also, the lad who was the who was actually become the high performance like administrator named guy Simon Dyke. He loved putting stats and data together. So we actually complemented each other really well, because he would do a lot of the number crunching for me, which was very valuable when I was obviously when I was on the road. That wasn't easy to do things like that. So he was invaluable, because he would come up with stuff. I'd chat with him about things we were looking at. He would find numbers for me out of the data I was generating, and then I would take his data and kind of put it in a cricket terms, use my coaching and my technical background to then produce something which I could present to Robbo. Robbo would interact with me a lot, and I had good conduits in the team like James Kirtley, and then later on people like Steve McGoffin who acted as the people to go between and that. So we did. And I did other things as well. Like we went to Champions League in 2011, and Robbo came up to me and said, find me something that's going to make a difference when we go to India. So I had a chat, although Barney wasn't working for that time, we had some connections at Sky Sports and that. So we went to Sky and got all their ground effects recordings from games in the subcontinent, and we put them together in like a looped like audio, which was about 40 minutes of audio, and we set speakers up within our training, because we went to the Champions League at the back end of October. So it was like a month after we finished the season. So the guys had finished the season and then continued to train. So what we did was we put this into the indoor centre and played it loud. So the guys got used to performing under the din of what it would be playing in Delhi, where we were going to be based.
Yeah.
So that was kind of a way we could contribute. So it didn't always come down to numbers and data and everything like that.
Fascinating stuff.
And we touched on like the cliched Moneyball. We touched on Moneyball through Robbo long before Moneyball became a cliche and stuff like that. So it's really good.
Yeah, well, I think I think we could talk about for the remainder of the podcast around those things. But I think it'd be interesting for the listeners to hear how you got involved in women's cricket and how your career brought you to where you are now, where you are head coach of the women's team in Hong Kong. So tell us that story.
Well, I kind of got as I said, I mentioned offline, I met my wife, Carol, back in 2009. Back end of one of my trips here to Hong Kong I'd been coming since 96 after doing my engineering degree with a large group of Hong Kong students who kind of took me under their wing and invited me in. I loved the place and I came back here regularly. So 2009, I met my future wife, Carol, and during the 2000, in my stay here in 2011, I had a friend who went to a guy called Rob Boddy, who's the historian at Sussex. He went to watch the Ashes in Australia, and on the way back, he stopped off and spent a week here in Hong Kong. So I was looking for something to do, but saw that there was this World League 3 going on, and Hong Kong were involved. So I thought, it might be worth popping to see, because it gave him an opportunity to take him and show him play somewhere like KCC, Kowloon Cricket Club, where the famous Hong Kong Sixes were held and everything like that. But it turned out that wasn't happening until after he was. So he had his trip and everything like that. And then afterwards, I made a contact, could only find an email address of the then head coach, which is a guy called Charlie Burke, and said to him, look, I'm really keen to see the games and everything like that, see what the cricket's like, but I don't know really, apart from KCC, I don't know the other grounds you're playing at, a place called Mission Road. So he directed me to where it was. I said, I'm interested. Told him what my role was and said, look, if you need any help, I'm here. I don't want anything for it. I'm just happy to help. So half an hour later, he replied to me, phoned me and said, we're training this afternoon. I'll direct you to where we are. Come and see us. I went to see him. During that week, they played. I did have no equipment, so it was pen and paper. And I went to games, all the opposition games, and kind of scouted for them. And then in the evenings, I met them at their hotel and talked them through. And it was quite, for them, it's quite, I think, quite an embryonic thing. A lot of them players had just never even come across it. I mean, I remember one player saying to me, so basically your job is to go and watch other games and tell us we're good enough to win the game. I said, no, that's not my job. My job is to go to the other teams and give you links into where their weaknesses are, what their strategy is, how they're looking to play against you, so how you can counterplay that against them. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying you're good or bad or whatever. I'm just giving you a methodology by which you can approach your game.
Yeah.
So we did that, and he said to me, are you due to be back next year? And I said, yeah. He said, well, we've got a tour to Nepal, a regional World Cup qualifier, T20 World Cup. Would you be interested to come along? So I checked it with Robbo that he had no objections to it. He said, well, no, mate, you're away. It's fine, no problem. I said, well, I just want to be, check with you. So I went on that tour with them. I went on a couple more tours. And then in 2013, after I got married in 2013 here in Hong Kong, I was pretty much at the airport going back to do another summer with Sussex, and Charlie phoned me up and said, there's a potential of a role here and everything like that. And obviously, I was now married, so my wife was still here in Hong Kong. I was in the UK. It was probably easier for me to relocate here to Hong Kong because I had quite a social circle here, whereas my wife, it would be difficult for her to go to. I mean, she's a geography teacher and everything like that. She teaches local geography and that. No problems English-based or anything like that. I just thought it's that, finding your own social circle. So I spoke with Robbo and explained the situation, and he was, as Robbo ever is with things like that, he was brilliant and that, no problem. And the back end of the 2013 season, I relocated here and started off as analyst, but also doing other roles. Like I worked with a local Chinese club called CCC, Craig and Gower Cricket Club, and I coached their men's team, which is called Hung Si, which is Cantonese for lion, and their women's side, which is called Fung Wong, which is phoenix, and coached both those alongside doing my analyst work for the national men's at that stage. I interacted with the national women at that stage by, as a coach, I went along to help at coaching sessions, because when you work in associate cricket, it's all hands to the pump and everything like that. And then, yeah, I did that right through 2015. And then I've been working a combination of roles. I became like a director of Chinese cricket when we put together like what we call their Dragons team. And they went on a few tours to Japan to play in competitions against Japan, but they were an all Chinese team, and that because our men's team is quite heavily expat. So I worked through various roles. The main core of my role was obviously analyst. In 2015, I did an assistance job with the women for about 2 to 3 years, but as a men's side, we started to really climb up through the rankings. We were in a couple of World Cups in 2014 and 2016 T20 World Cups. So commitment became quite tough for me, and I wasn't happy that I couldn't commit the time I wanted to the women. So I stepped back from that and carried on with the men's thing. But then in 2019, when the previous coach, Richie Waite, stepped down and moved into another role with a local club, the opportunity came up, and I just kind of thought, you know what, it's something I've always wanted to do. I had a good affinity with the players because of working with some of them at the Fung Wong side and coaching with them and that. They knew my wife quite well because she used to come and watch the cricket with me and that. So I got really well with them, and I just felt like I believed in them. I saw something in them, and I just believed in them, and I just felt that. And it's no criticism of anything or any system or whatever, but I just felt like I could see a way of helping them go forward and that. So I applied for the role, and as I do with most things like that, I kind of really buried myself into it and got my plan of what I was going to do, interviewed and got the role. And I took that up in 2019. August 2019 was my start. We played an East Asia Cup against Japan, Korea and China in Korea in September 2019. And then the so-called pandemic struck, and we didn't play another tournament until last November in 2021. So it was over 2 years between our tournaments, and we spent the in-between feathering away of training around various lockdowns and stuff like that. So it was quite challenging, but it was also, I like to be challenged because nothing like that had ever been thrown at me. And to be fair, none of the players either. So we built, I think, our culture and our character out of that and stuff. So yeah, so that's where I kind of got into the role and that. So since November, we've had a bit more chance to get back into cricket, although to be fair, unfortunately for the girls that came back on that November trip, they went into their own quarantine that they have to get back into Hong Kong, which was 21 days, which for them was, we went on which was a 9 to 10 day tour, and then they had to spend 21 days in quarantine, which, you know, I hold my hat up to, they were brilliant to do that and everything like that, because they're not contracted, they're all working people, or they're at school studying or whatever. So it was a massive chunk out of them, so hats off to them, they were brilliant and everything like that. And then, say, just 2 weeks ago, we played, just prior to the Fair Break tournament, we played a bilateral series with UAE to give the players, after they'd only been out of lockdown about a week, some game time going into Fair Break and that.
So tell us, Chris, a little bit about the, you know, before we wrap up, just tell us a little bit about the structure of women and girls cricket in Hong Kong, as far as you understand it.
Well, we're starting to it's always been very, it's always been, I think, difficult to, it's because cricket's not ingrained in the culture here. You know, you can't turn TV on and see games and everything like that. It's also, it's always very hard to sell it, especially to the indigenous local Chinese and everything like that, because they just have nothing in their culture and that. So it has, but that has been a lot of hard work. But our development team, we've got our general manager of high performance, Mark Farmer, our general manager of recreational cricket, Ravi Nagdev, who've helped by helping me put a structure together for our domestic league. So we've kind of made our domestic leagues a bit more competitive by splitting them into two divisions and that. So each kind of group of teams gets a more competitive environment to play in. We've got, now we're starting to put together a pathway group, which is run by, I kind of oversee, but it's actually run day to day by my assistant coach, a guy called Saklane, and that, who's a tremendous help to me, unbelievable help, and I mean, what he does and everything like that. And he puts that all, he all runs that. So, but we've also got a schools program which is run by a very dedicated team of development staff. We've got, who some of those are also our women players, so some of our Chinese women players and that. So they go and work in the schools and that and get the point across and everything like that. So I think hopefully our women's structure is kind of starting to really flourish. We've got we've done some under 19 leagues as well in the last two seasons or so. Obviously a lot of our timelines have been messed around because of the pandemic and the fact that Hong Kong's been hit very hard by the pandemic and our access and our ability to go out and play sport. So we're probably 18 months behind where we wanted to have been, real no fault of anybody's really, and it's been unfortunate for the players as well, because they kind of all got raring to go and then off they got stopped. I think it's been going for a while. Women's cricket, it was kind of like, it was a driving force behind it. Was a lady called Anita Miles, unfortunately passed away some years back. She's the mother of one of our national squad players, Natasha Miles, and that, and her and her husband Rodney Miles, who are great stalwarts of women's cricket in Hong Kong, you know, really pushed women's cricket here. So when I arrived here, women's cricket was, you know, it was established and everything like that. It was kind of obviously in quite a small form because just the pool of players was quite small, but we've managed to build that up. It's built up since the time I was here. So it's been, you know, a really good journey to watch and everything like that, a lot of players and that. And what's been good is when I came here, a lot of those players were quite young. So we've still got a core of those players who were there when I first arrived and who've been playing for Hong Kong for many years now and everything like that, who are still actually quite young, and that they would have been playing for maybe when they were 14 and 15 and stuff like that. So they're, you know, 10 years down the line, they're only mid-20s and everything like that, so they've still got, you know, decent opportunities to push their cricket on and everything like that. So we've got a really nice setup here. It's unfortunately been held up a little bit and everything like that, but we're ready and raring to go as soon as things go on. And I know as soon as things started opening up a few weeks back, Ravi was straight in there to get league cricket going, and they've extended the season a little bit into that period of the year where we wouldn't normally play because it's a bit hot, but the girls are prepared to play because they just want to get out there and play and everything like that and stuff and that. So, yeah, it's been great. And obviously, we got 12 of our players in Fair Break, which is an incredible, you know, initiative for women's cricket and everything like that. To be able to, for my players to stand side by side by some of the most elite women cricketers in the world is a fantastic, you know, classroom and learning experience for them as well. And as well as also to test their skills and see where they lie. So I know, listening to the feedback, they're having a great time, but great time because they're learning. They've got so much they're absorbing and that. So that's a great initiative for women's cricket and that, hopefully that, you know, builds even further, really.
How do people find out about that initiative? What's it called?
Fair Break. It's I think it's out there. It's run by Sean Martin, who I believe, if I'm right, is Damian Martin's brother. I think one of the major sponsors is a company called Gencore, which is like a supplements company. Who's the boss of that? Venkat. His daughter also plays in our national squad, and he's a businessman here in Hong Kong and everything like that. So yeah, no, it's backed by lots of people. I don't quite know how their business model works and everything like that, but it's had a lot of support. And that, so yeah, I think at this moment in time, you can go on the Cricket Hong Kong Facebook page, and with the games are being streamed live. I know in the UK, it's on Free Sport the numbers of global people watching it, I think, are quite incredible. And it's the semi-finals and the finals is coming this weekend. So I think semi-finals are tomorrow for Hong Kong time. They're 8 p.m. and 12 midday. I think they're 1 and 5 in the UK. And that, so certainly something to look out for. I think it's channel 226 or 426 or something like that in the UK. If those on Sky, I'm not sure what it is on Virgin and that, but I know my mum's like watching it all the time over there and everything like that. And I watch it around my coaching here and that. So yeah, so something really great. That's been part hosted by Cricket Hong Kong, because originally it was due to be held here, but because of the pandemic, had to be relocated. But that is being hosted effectively by us, and I understand, don't quote me on this, but I think it may well be going to be actually held here, pandemic allowing, next year and everything right. like that. So it's just great. I mean, there's a lot gone into it and that, and you know you just got to look at what it's doing for women's cricket and that.
Amazing. Well, that's a great point to kind of draw our chat to a close, and what a fantastic journey and story to listen to somebody who, you know, got into the game through going to watch Sussex play at Hove all those years ago with mum and dad, sitting in the deck chair, getting hooked, having played a bit of garden cricket, but that was about it. And I think that's we just lost our internet connection there, but absolutely brilliant for Chris to have joined us, to have heard his story, starting off as we heard back in at Hove, watching with his mum and dad, to being inspired by characters like John Stone, I think Graham Evans, familiarly known as Taff, getting into becoming one of the inaugural cricket analysts. With the support of Peter Moores, and then more latterly Robbo, and then getting across to Hong Kong, getting involved with the cricket infrastructure on the men's side initially, and then getting involved in his current role as a head of women's cricket, where there seems to be lots of interest and optimism about future opportunities for women cricketers. So Chris, thanks ever so much, and we look forward to keeping in contact. Guys, if you've enjoyed this podcast, please continue to wait and listen for our next one, and to spread the word. Just let everybody know about our podcast, Lives in Women's Cricket with Cricket Coach 365. Thank you. Thanks for listening, everybody. As a reminder, each Cricket Coach 365 podcast will be released every Friday at 6 p.m. on Spotify and Apple Play. After listening, please leave us a positive review on Spotify and share it with your friends and contacts. You can also follow us on Instagram at cricket_coach365. Have a great day.